Chapter 14. Julia's Rolls-Royce passed under a broad stone arch, watched by a pair of silent, moss-laden griffins perched on either side. The wrought-iron gate swung shut as the car sped down the long, gravelled drive. Even with the New Year's punishing weather, Willem's grounds were maintained in pristine condition. Formally arranged flower beds alternated with cherry trees along the side of the drive. Broad lawns dotted with dumpy cycads rolled away to a border of glossy shrubs. Behind them, a thick rank of Brazilian rosewoods completed the shield against prying eyes. The Nene was a couple of kilometres away to the southeast. In the summer she could look out of the manor's second-story windows and watch the little sailing boats cruising up and down the river, dreaming of the freedom they possessed. But this time of year always saw the valley floor flooded by the monsoon rains, the boats safe on dry land. The water was deeper each year as more and more soil was washed away by the powerful current. Further down, between the A1 and the tail end of the Ferry Meadows estuary, it became a permanent salt marsh, fetid and inutile. But the secluded Willem estate remained a passive refuge, protected from environmental ravages by a wall of her money, changeless apart from the spectacular cycle of flowers which varied from month to month. Philip Evans had bought it as soon as he returned to England, paying off the communal farmers who had occupied it under the PSP's auspices. Landscape teams had laboured for months, returning it to its former splendour. Actually, it was probably a lot better than it used to be, she suspected, especially after she saw how much it had cost. Grandpa hadn't cared. He wanted elegance, and by God, that's what he got. It was worthwhile, though. Willem was easy on the eye. Time flowed just that fraction slower across its trim lawns and through the sumptuous interior. The fact that she never, but never, used it for business of any kind helped strengthen the sensation of relief she always experienced when she crossed that invisible and ultra-secure threshold. Willem was for parties and lovers and friends. Today counted as friends. The Kitchener case was too intriguing to be classed as work. She pursed her lips in self-chastisement. Calling the murder intriguing in front of Cormac Ranasfari would never do. Royan access request. Expedite, she told the nodes. Hi, Snowy. She grinned broadly. On the jump seat opposite, Rachel gave her an expectant look, then went back to the view across the lawn. A black-furred, jean-tailored sentinel panther was just visible loping along the grass in front of the shrubs. Royan was the only person to call her that. It was her middle name, Snowflower, bestowed by the American desert cult with which she had spent her childhood. She never used it, but there was no unit of data on the planet Royan couldn't access. Hello to you, she answered. Talking to Royan was always a real opiate. He had taught her all sorts of programming tricks. Thanks to him, she could write better hot rod software than half of England's professional hackers. She wasn't sure what he got in return, probably just the satisfaction of having someone outside his concrete eyrie who would listen. That and the fact she was the Julia Evans. Whatever, they had been firm friends ever since Greg's first Event Horizon case. He was another of those rare people who was honest with her. Eleanor has been to see me.
I don't know, all these girlfriends.
I like Eleanor.
All you men like Eleanor.
Jealous, jealous, jealous. Is what you are.
Certainly am. All I've got is money.
How is Patrick?
Fine, I suppose.
Oh, Snowy. You haven't finished with him already. You only met him 5 weeks ago.
Don't you start. I get quite enough of that from Grandpa and Morgan and Greg.
They care. I care, Snowy. It's nice to have people who care.
Yeah.
I saw you on the channels this morning.
Did you now?
Yes, yes, yes. Would you like me to put out a snuff contract on Jackie Coleman?
I would truly love you to put out a snuff contract on that bitch.
Really?
The only trouble is, everyone would know I was behind it. Lord, I hope nothing does happen to her. I never thought of that before. The way conspiracy theories are flying round at the moment.
Guilty, 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 chuckle. Serves you right.
Yes. Well, you would spring me from jail, wouldn't you?
For a price. Thanks a bunch. Some friend you are. Seriously, I could glitch her cast something chronic. How about superimposing a blue AV recording, give the porno starlet her face? Julia had to rub her hand over her mouth to stifle the laugh. Rachel didn't look this time. She had probably guessed what was going on.
Don't tempt me, Julia implored. I'll get that Coleman slag one day. You see if I don't. It won't be in public, but she'll know and I'll know, and that's what truly counts. Let me know if you need a hand.
Yes, I will. Thanks.
I've been going through the Laund Abbey security ware for Greg and Eleanor.
Yes? And?
You were really looking out for Kitchener, weren't you?
Not me. I didn't even know a thing about him until 2 days ago. Apparently Cormac Ranasvari insisted on upgrading the security at the Abbey. He's always been concerned that Kitchener didn't have adequate protection, and this was a perfect opportunity to insist.
Oh, well, that security system your people installed is top grade. The Guardian bites are hot, hot, hot stuff.
You can't melt through.
Didn't say that. I could. And possibly another 5 or 6 people in the country could. But it's tough.
Oh. So that takes the Techmerk penetration mission out of the possible and into the improbable.
Looks like it.
Thanks for telling me. Do you want to sit in on the conference?
Yes, yes, yes. Willem itself was a splendid 18th-century manor house, a broad grey stone facade with pink and yellow roses clotting the sturdy trelliswork on either side of the overhanging portico. The long windows were fitted with silvered glass against the heat. Julia saw 100 tiny reflections of herself climbing out of the rolls. Lucas, her butler, was walking down the steps to greet her. There was a couple of other cars parked outside. Morgan's caramel-coloured Rover and a cobalt-blue Ford, which she guessed was Ranasvari's.
"A pleasant morning, Mum?"
Lucas asked. He was in his mid-60s, wearing a tailcoat with bright brass buttons, wonderfully dignified. The PSP had kept him on the dole for 10 years, saying personal service was a humiliating anachronism, and they'd find him proper employment. The day after Philip Evans bought Willem, he had cycled out from Peterborough and asked for a job. The manor functioned so smoothly under his supervision, and he'd never attended corporate management training courses. She handed him her raincoat and boater.
"Let's say I covered a lot of ground."
He inclined his head.
"Yes, ma'am. Mr. and Mrs. Mandel have just passed the gatehouse. They will be here shortly."
"Great. Show them up to the study as soon as they arrive."
She raced up the steps and through the big double doors, most of her major friends together, working on a problem, and including her. It looked like being a great afternoon. The study was on the first floor. Julia took her deep purple blazer off as she went up the curving staircase. She was still undoing her slim bow tie as she barged into the study. Morgan Walshaw and Cormac Ranasvari were waiting, along with Gabriel Thompson. Gabriel was the only person Julia knew who was aging in reverse. The woman was another ex-Mindstar officer Greg had introduced her to. Her gland had been taken out 2 years ago, the precognition faculty, it adduced, having brought too many psychological problems. Seeing into the future, Gabriel lived in perpetual fear of watching her own death drawing steadily closer. After leaving the army, she had gone to seed, badly. Now, with the gland out, she was taking care of her appearance again. She watched her diet, kept up her health, and was beginning to expand her interests. After starting out as a dowdy spinster who looked about 55, she had worked her way down to become a pleasant-faced 45-year-old, with a pretty brisk attitude to life, although Julia had detected some brittleness on more than one occasion. Officially, Gabriel was acting as advisor to Event Horizon's security division, while Morgan set up a team of psychics. Greg had refused the assignment point-blank. The two of them had moved into the same house 18 months ago.
"Hello, Gabriel," Julia said brightly.
She gave Morgan a quick peck on the cheek as she carried on down the long oak table which filled the centre of the study.
"Thank you for coming, Cormac."
Cormac had half risen from his own armchair. He ducked his head before reseating himself. Julia plopped down in the hard chair at the head of the table and activated the terminal in front of her.
"I asked Royan to attend. Is that all right?"
she asked Morgan. He didn't strictly approve of Royan.
"Certainly."
Her fingers pecked at the terminal's keyboard, loading the familiar code. Above the stone fireplace, the flat screen she used for video conferencing flickered dimly. "Plugged in," it printed in bold orange letters. Royan always refused to use a vocal synthesizer. The closest he came was the silent speech when her nodes were interfaced with the ware stacks in his room. Eleanor had described him to her once. Ever since, Julia had experienced a subtle guilt at her relief that she would never actually have to meet him. although a bleak presence always seemed to float on the periphery of their electronic link, as if he was struggling to project himself through at her.
"You're paranoid, girl," she told herself.
Another code, and Grandpa was there, plugged into the study's systems. She talked banalities with the three of them as the first raindrops of the afternoon began to speckle the lead-framed windows. Sluggish grey clouds lumbered over the Neen Valley, making the oak-panelled study seem funereal. Wall-mounted bioloom globes came on, giant luminous pearls on curving tubular brass arms. Lucas's unmistakable soft knock sounded on the door. He ushered Greg and Eleanor in. Julia listened to their resume of the case, trying to conceal a shudder when Greg ran through his interview with Liam Burskin. She could see he was still wound up about it, and it took a lot to affect Greg. Whenever she glanced at Cormac, he had the same politely attentive expression in place. "Can't fool me, Cormac," she thought. "Not anymore." His aloofness was a defence against the craziness and stupidity of the world, as much as his physical retreat into his laboratory complex. But now this world had pierced clean through and bitten him. With some surprise, she realized she was actually feeling sorry for him. After Eleanor finished talking, Julia asked Greg to squirt all the police files stored in his cyberfax into the NN core.
"Grandpa can run correlation exercises for us," she said.
"That's right. Bloody skivvy I am," Philip muttered. "Nice to know why I was invited."
Greg smiled thinly and aimed his cyberfax at her terminal. Eleanor added the bytes she'd built up.
"So, it's definitely not one of the students," Gabriel said thoughtfully.
"Yes, I'm sure they didn't kill Kitchener," said Greg. "Although how my opinion would stand up in court I'm not so certain about. But the physical evidence does tend to corroborate my interviews. Besides, none of them had a mind anything like Burskin's."
"Your opinion is good enough for me," Morgan said.
"Even your new friend Rosette Harding Clark is in the clear," Eleanor flashed Greg a Spartan grin. "Her family is very rich, and according to Julia's legal office, the child wouldn't get a penny out of Kitchener's estate. If the Harding Clarks were poor, Rosette might have been able to apply for a maintenance order against the estate. However, the question doesn't arise."
"Then it must have been a Tecmerc snuff," Morgan said.
"Your security gear protecting Lorne Abbey was the best. No one on the circuit has heard of anybody wanting to buy the kind of programs which could burn through."
Morgan turned his head to look at the flat screen. "How reliable are your sources?"
"Very, very, very."
"Somebody got in."
"I still maintain it would be difficult for anyone to get in and out of the Chater Valley that night," Greg said.
"Then who did it?" Warshaw asked. His voice had risen a notch. Gabriel caught his eye, a silent rebuke.
"Logically, it was a Tecmerc snuff," Greg said unhappily. "Nobody else would have the know-how and operational experience to get in and out without leaving a trace. That's what I find incredible. There wasn't a single trace, not one."
He shook his head. "We're missing method and motive at the moment," Eleanor said.
"Motive I have plenty of."
"What?"
Julia asked.
"According to the circuit, Kitchener was working on a boron-proton reactor for you."
"Edward was doing no such thing," Cormac objected. Philip chortled, the sound reverberating out of hidden speakers, directionless.
"Ah, but it fits, my boy, doesn't it? Kitchener's speciality was atomic and molecular interaction. A successful boron-proton reaction would be almost as worthwhile as a gigaconductor. Look at it from an economic point of view. A successful boron-proton fusion produces energized helium, that's all. No pollutants, no radioactive emission. It's a bloody marvel, or it would be if we could build one. Kitchener is just the kind of man to iron out the bugs involved in getting a smooth fusion process going."
"It would be a logical assumption," Morgan said grudgingly. "If someone was aware Kitchener was contracted to Event Horizon, was receiving money from us, they could well think it was for energy research. Especially if they knew it was coming from Cormac's office, the inventor of the gigaconductor."
Eleanor rapped a knuckle lightly on the table and tilted her head to look at Julia. "How are you going to power Pryor's fan?"
It took a second for her thoughts to jump between subjects.
"I'm considering two options. The first is an ocean thermal generator system, with floating platforms anchored out in the Atlantic, and bringing the electricity ashore with superconductor cables. Second is to drill a couple of hundred deep boreholes across the Fens basin, then insert direct thermocouple cables down them, siphon energy right out of the mantle. The tower and the projected cyber precincts certainly can't be powered from existing mainland sources. The capacity simply doesn't exist. Cost-wise, direct coupling has the edge, naturally since there are no moving parts to maintain once the holes have been sunk. In engineering terms, ocean thermal is a more mature technology. So, at the moment, I'm just waiting to see if Cormac makes any significant progress on direct thermocoupling in the next 10 months. We don't have to make the actual selection until the end of the year.
I'd like it to be earlier,
Philip muttered. Behave, Grandpa. She found the camera lens above the flat screen and gave it a stern look.
So it would make a lot of sense for you to be working on third, fourth, even fifth alternatives,
Eleanor mused.
Yes, absolutely. But we're not.
What other embryonic technologies can supply the rise in industrial demand? Greg asked. And more importantly, who is working on them?
Grandpa?
Easy enough, my girl. There are really only 5 viable candidates. Jet stream turbines, when you tether large vacuum bubbles 12 kilometers up and fit them out with giant rotor blades. The wind velocities up there are pretty impressive. Next, you've got cold fusion.
Cormac grunted disparagingly. But when Julia looked at him, he just mooned and went back to gazing out of the window.
Well, they might crack it,
Philip said grumpily. I'm just listing options.
Go on, Grandpa.
Microfusion reactors, which is a sort of advanced version of cold fusion, using molecular-scale compression techniques to fuse extremely small clusters of deuterium atoms in a gizmo the size of a processor chip. Something that small does away with the heat sink problems you get in tokamaks, but you'd need to group a lot of reactors together to produce a decent output. Ocean current turbines? But there's a question mark over which currents. Gulf Stream? Mozambique current? The Kuroshio East Australian current? Cape Horn current? They're all possibles, but they're all remote from Europe. Then there's solar satellites, cheap and practical, especially now we've got the Clark space plane. But there isn't a government in the world that'd grant a license to site a receiver array. Too many environmental, or rather environmentalist, problems when it comes to beaming energy through the atmosphere.
Who is researching them? Greg asked.
Apart from the power sats, just about every combinate, plus dozens of universities under government contract. The whole world needs an energy source which won't add to the greenhouse effect.
Julia clasped her hands together, mind devouring the problem eagerly. She didn't even need to bring the nodes online.
Grandpa, are there any research teams working on boron-proton fusion?
Yes, several.
Okay, compile a list of the 25 most promising research and design teams for boron-proton reactors and each of the other projects you mentioned, then cross-reference them with Dyson Berg Mercantile.
Gotcha, kid.
Isn't that one of our banks? Morgan asked.
Yes.
She told them about the conversation with Carl Hildebrandt.
Interesting, Greg said. I wish I'd been there.
Got one, Juliet,
Philip said.
He sounded slightly apprehensive, which was unusual.
The Randon Company. They have a loan package of 850 million euro francs with Dyson Berg Mercantile, 200 million new sterling. 2/3 of it was spent constructing a laboratory complex outside Reims, which is dedicated to investigating microfusion techniques.
Has to be, Morgan said quietly.
Randon also sponsored Nicholas Bezic,
Philip said flatly.
Greg sat up straight, staring at the terminal at the head of the table.
No such thing as coincidence, Gabriel said. It came out almost as a challenge.
Greg glanced at her fleetingly.
No, he said firmly.
Oh, come on, Greg. Psi isn't perfect.
Tell you, if it had been any of the others, I would have said maybe. But Bezic, no chance.
If you say so.
She looked away, uninterested.
This is all based on very spurious assumptions, Cormac said.
Yeah, maybe,
Greg said. He sounded troubled.
Royan, this rumour about Kitchener working on boron-proton fusion, did it exist before he was snuffed?
Yes, yes, yes. Heavy-duty speculation as soon as Event Horizon payments were made to his bank account.
For Christ's sake,
Morgan said tightly. Sorry, but people like Kitchener are always being scanned by hot rods. His work is interesting, not to mention commercial.
But nobody knew for certain what he was doing, right?
Greg persisted. Right. The lightware cruncher at Launde wasn't plugged into any data nets. Kitchener probably didn't want to risk having data snatches run against him. Smart man. That's why there was the interest in him. The lines on Greg's face deepened. He looked down at the table, lost in contemplation. Eleanor gave him a concerned glance. Julia found the level of almost unconscious devotion between them was utterly enchanting, chiding herself for peeking.
"It couldn't be Nicholas Bezick," Eleanor said, "because he knew Kitchener wasn't working on boron-proton fusion for Event Horizon, so he wouldn't have wiped the Bendix, would he?"
Greg let out a relieved-sounding sigh and smiled at her.
"I think I put a bonus in your wage packet."
She grinned back. "Exactly what was Kitchener working on for you?" Gabriel asked.
"Wormhole physics," Cormac started to explain. Julia was moderately surprised Morgan hadn't told Gabriel about the research contract.
He must take need to know far more seriously than she'd ever imagined. She didn't know whether to be amused at the notion or not.
"A star drive,"
Gabriel said incredulously, when Ranasvari finished. She looked at Julia for confirmation.
"Yes, afraid so."
School days discipline rescued her once again. But Gabriel's expression did look so funny, probably the same as hers when Cormac had first confronted her about having the murder solved.
"Royan," Greg said slowly, "was there any hint of that on the circuit?"
"No, no, no, no. Wow. A star drive. Ultra exclamation mark. How far had he got?"
"There was no prospect of him ever developing a star drive mechanism," Cormac Ranasvari said, distaste at the idea showing on his compact face.
"Edward was simply working on the physics which could open the opportunity for theoretical instantaneous transit."
"Did this research involve neurohormones at all?"
Greg asked. "Most certainly. Edward was attempting to formulate a themed neurohormone, which would enable him to investigate the possibility of CTCs existing. He and I considered that to be the most promising route to verification."
"CTCs?"
Greg clicked his fingers.
"Nicholas Bezick mentioned them. What is one?"
Cormac maintained a blankly impassive expression. Julia knew he was disappointed, having to explain concepts which were so obvious.
"A closed, time-like curve is a loop through space-time."
"No messing."
Greg appeared so innocently interested.
"It has been postulated that they exist on a sub-microscopic scale, forming space-time, approximately 10 to the minus power 35 meters wide and stretching back 10 to the minus power 42 seconds. Theoretically, you could use one to travel into the past."
"What about creating a paradox?" Gabriel asked. There was bright interest in her eyes. "Killing your own grandfather?"
"If you killed him 10 to the minus 42 of a second ago instead of right here in the present, how would you know?" Morgan asked mildly.
"I don't think you'd notice a vast difference."
She waved him down, irritably, concentrating on Cormac.
"Yes, the classic question," Cormac said politely. "Travelling back to kill your grandfather before your father was born, thus creating a paradox. If your grandfather was killed, how could you have been born to travel back to kill him? This is a null question, because quantum cosmology allows for multiple parallel universes, an infinite stack of space-times, with identical physical parameters, except each one has a different history. Hitler triumphant, J.F. Kennedy never killed, the PSP remaining in power. If CTCs do exist, the multiple histories will interconnect, effectively integrating the parallel universes into a unified family and facilitating travel between them. In this instance, quantum mechanics permits the establishment of as many connected universes as there are variant outcomes of the time traveler's actions. So, you can travel back in time to kill your grandfather, because in another universe, the one you traveled from, your grandfather will remain alive to conceive your father."
"Yes," Gabriel sucked her cheeks in. "Whenever I looked into the future, I saw multiple probabilities. The further into the future, the more probabilities there were, and the wilder they became."
"Wilder?" Julia asked, fascinated.
"Improbable. Mammoths roaming round in Siberia, the greenhouse effect suddenly reversing, obscure politicians becoming statesmen, weird religions taking hold.
I never looked too far," she added contritely. "Because death haunted those extremes," Julia completed privately.
"Had you looked back in time, you would have seen that same multiplication of alternatives," Cormac said. "That is what Edward hoped to see."
"What?" Gabriel asked sharply.
"To look into the past."
"You said Kitchener was developing a neurohormone to perceive CTCs, not look into the past," Greg said.
Cormac's smile was wintry.
"But don't you see?
That's the same thing. Edward theorized that CTCs are the basis of psychic ability.
Greg and Gabriel exchanged a glance bordering on pained anxiety.
What made him think that?
Greg asked. These microscopic holes through space-time are too small for physical objects to pass through. So he suggested that they facilitate the exchange of pure data.
Your mind, Mr. Mandel, is quite literally connected with billions, trillions of other minds, a vast repository of visual images, smells, tastes, and memories. This so-called psychic trait in certain humans is no more than a superior interpretation ability.
You can make sense of our cosmological heritage, filter out the screams of the white noise jumble, pick over the bones.
If that's true, then how could I reach as far as I can? You said these CTCs are microscopic.
Indeed, but there are so many of them. If you go down one of these wormholes back in time for that fraction of a second, move an infinitesimal distance, you will be able to find another CTC at its terminus, perhaps several, and that connection will allow you to extend another increment further outward. You understand? It is like a chain, appallingly convoluted, which accounts for the limits in range you experience, but a clear link nonetheless, stretching across infinity and up and down eternity.
But I could see into the future, Gabriel said. How could these CTCs produce that effect? You said they go back in time.
They do. But the now we are in is the past of the futures you perceived.
Yes, said Gabriel, though she sounded unconvinced.
However, by itself, looking into the future isn't sufficient to prove the existence of CTCs. Psychic is such a prejudicial term, you see. People have always laid claim to the power of foresight. But if CTCs exist, then the past should be available on an equal basis.
Edward hoped that by producing a neurohormone capable of opening up the past in the way that precognition opens up the future, he would make a case for microscopic CTCs which would be irrefutable. There could be very few alternative explanations.
Julia.
Greg's voice was dead, devoid of all inflection. Everyone looked at him.
What was the result of the analysis on those ampules Eleanor gave you?
She had some trouble forming the words. Her throat had dried up as soon as she started thinking about the implications.
The laboratory said it was a themed neurohormone, sharing some characteristics with the standard precognition formula, but it's not a type they were familiar with.
Edward succeeded in formulating a retrospection neurohormone?
Cormac asked with a feverish note of hope.
Looks that way, doesn't it?
Greg was staring at Gabriel. Julia saw she had gone quite white. Her hands were trembling slightly.
No, Morgan said. He didn't use a loud voice, but the authority he conveyed was final. He took hold of Gabriel's hand. You're not infusing it.
Who else can?
She answered.
My temporal ability is a proven one.
You are proposing to use it?
Cormac asked. He blinked owlishly at Gabriel.
Why? We don't even know if it works. All Edward's records were erased.
Julia cursed under her breath. It was a perpetual mystery to her how someone as smart as Cormac could be so oblivious to the problems of life itself.
If it enables us to look into the past, we can use it to see who killed Kitchener, she told him,
using the strained tone reserved for making company divisional managers wish they'd never been born. Cormac opened his mouth to speak, then glanced at Gabriel, blushing furiously.
I'm sorry. I wasn't thinking. This whole series of events has been extremely stressful.
He trailed off.
I'll infuse it,
Eleanor said.
No bloody chance, Greg snapped.
Why not? These themed neurohormones are designed to amplify single psi traits. Anyone with an even faintly psionic ability should be able to infuse one. And you always say I'm sensitive.
Greg's face darkened.
That's hardly a qualified objective opinion.
What have we got to lose? If it doesn't work, there's no disaster. We simply carry on the investigation as before. If it does work, we find out who the murderer is.
It was quite peculiar. Julia was watching Greg garner himself for a tirade, desperately trying to think of some way she could defuse the situation before it degenerated into a vicious personal row. She knew from past experience just how forceful Greg could get when he was really upset. And Eleanor was just as bad. Both of them complete stubborn heads. But something happened, because Greg suddenly gave Eleanor a perplexed, almost awestruck stare, and sat back limply in his seat, his anger visibly draining away.
What is it? Eleanor asked. She was frowning at his behaviour.
Nothing. Which Julia didn't believe for a second.
You mean you don't object?
Eleanor said, suspicion charging her voice. He gave her a lame grin. No.
Oh.
Julia looked at Morgan for guidance, but all he could manage was a confused grimace. She couldn't think what had made Greg change his mind so abruptly. The mood swing had struck him so swiftly, she was tempted to call it a revelation.
If Gabriel's precognition is any example, we'll need to do this at Launde Abbey itself, Greg said. You'll have a job trying to focus on the temporal displacement of a location outside your immediate area. Right, Gabriel?
Right.
Okay, 2 points. Well, 3, actually. I'll use my empathic ability to monitor your attempt, or at least try to. I want you fitted with a somnolence inducer. That way, if anything does go wrong, I'll sense it and simply send you off to sleep until the neurohormone wears off.
Good idea,
Eleanor said. She seemed relieved Greg was taking it seriously.
Gabriel, I'd like you there as an advisor. You too, Doctor, if it's no trouble.
I would be happy to attend, Cormac Ranasvari said stiffly.
Finally, we can't really exclude Vernon Langley or his team. I suggest we don't try. But I want him to bring Nicholas Beswick with him.
Why?
Julia asked.
You'll see tomorrow. Or at least, I think you will.